Ukishetistakel od bedover tire, and when you look further into this matter, you'll see ki hashleimus amiti, because the complete perfection, hurak advekus bo yisbarach, is only clinging to Hashem. V'uma shedavid hamelech omer, and this is what David hamelech said, vani, to me, kirvas elokim li tov, being close to Hashem is good. V'omer, and David went on to say, acha shalti meis Hashem, one thing I have requested from Hashem, osav akesh, that I will ask for, Shifti beveis Hashem, allow me to sit in the house of Hashem, kol yimei chayai, all the days of my life, ki rak zehu atov, because only this is good, v'chol zulatzeh, and anything other than this, she'achshavu b'nei adam l'tov, that people assume to be good, eino ele hevel v'shav niteh, is only empty and vain. A number of years ago, it was an Erev Shabbos, and my mother-in-law was preparing for Shabbos cooking, getting everything ready, and the phone rings. It's a telemarketer selling, of all things, tombstones. Now, it was Erev Shabbos, and my mother-in-law was very involved, and she couldn't get this fellow off the phone. And finally, she said to the fellow, listen, I don't want to waste your time, but I have no intention of dying. The fellow said, madam, I don't mean to be rude, but all of us must go. Our time comes. My mother-in-law said, no, you don't understand. I have no intention of dying. Thank you very much. And she hung up the phone. Now, that line was said in jest to an overzealous tombstone salesman, but here's the point. There's a certain reality that all of us have, and that is that I really don't intend to die. You see, this is the second problem with the world to come. Even after I've studied the whole concept and I understand that Hashem created us for a reason, I understand that there's a gym and there's a spa, even after I got it and very clearly understand it, I have to then understand that it's me, that it's not my alter ego, that it's not my distant cousin, that it's not some scaled down version, that it's not my neshama, that it's me. And that's the first obstacle, the first problem with dealing with Olam Haba. But now we come to the second problem. Even after I got it, even after I thought about it, even after I studied it, the second problem is that I don't think it's really going to happen because, you see, quite honestly, I have no intention of dying. Listen, my whole life I've always been alive. Every day of my life I've been here. I've been an occupant of this body. I've been here, and I fully intend to live forever. And as strange as it sounds, we don't really see death as reality. As a matter of fact, I have a mushal that I think it's very comparable to. There's an entire industry dedicated towards writing travel brochures, travel magazines, travel ads, and they write such beautiful copy with such exquisite pictures, exotic scenes, beaches, trees, volcanoes. And people pick up these brochures, they read these magazines, and you could almost watch that wistful look in their eye, wow, if only. And I want you to understand that the vast majority of people who pick up those brochures, who read those magazines, have no intention of going to those places. Oh, they're beautiful to look at, exotic, wonderful vacations, but I'm just not in that parsha. I don't have the funds. That's not me. Now, that's okay to look at travel brochures with that attitude, but I believe that many people view the world to come in that way. Oh, the way Chazal depicted, it's beautiful, wonderful, it's going to be exquisite. But quite frankly, it has nothing to do with me because I have no intention of dying. And as strange as it sounds, that is a reality. And the Chofetz Chaim explains to us how extensive this is. He explains that each person believes that there's a certain society of people who die. It's the old people, the sick people, the unfortunate people, and Baruch Hashem, I happen not to be a member of that select society, so it's not applicable to me. And it's not by accident that this happens, and it's not just a quirk of nature. The Chofetz Chaim explains that this is actually totally relevant and incredibly significant in the creation of man. You see, if I ever really got it, if I ever fully understood that my life as I lead it now will come to an end, the life that I lead would be vastly different. If I ever saw the kate, if I ever saw the end of it, then my life itself would take on such a different understanding. Everything that I did would have different meaning. Everything that I did would have much more relevance and importance, and effectively, I would lose free will. You see, my ability to remain in this semi-conscious state, my ability to sort of get it and not, allows me to be the one who chooses what I'm actually going to do with my time. If for a split second, I would really visualize my body put in the ground and I standing in front of Hashem and being judged for everything that I did, don't you believe I would live my life differently? Don't you believe I would make different choices? Don't you believe that I'd be using my time in a different way? And while that sounds wonderful, the reality is if that were to fully happen, effectively, I would lose free will. And therefore, to allow man to actually make the difficult choices, to allow man to have the ability to choose this way or that way, and thereby be credited with making the right decisions, Hashem gives us this ability to totally cloud it out, not to see it, not to visualize it, to actually believe in some extent that I will live forever. And one of the jobs of a person who is trying to grow, who is trying to accomplish, who's trying to really live a life of meaning and purpose, is to visualize that moment. But the reality is that it's very, very lofty, very hazy, and the vast majority of people never see it. Now, I got a chance to see this concept in action in a very interesting way. My grandmother was an older woman, and she would go to the Lake House Hotel, a nice hotel in the Catskills, and once a week, at least, I would go visit her, and I got a chance to sit with her friends, and we would talk often for a good long while. I remember one afternoon we were sitting around with some of our friends, and the conversation turned when someone said that so-and-so had just passed away. And another gentleman in the circle said, "Oy vey, all the old people, they're all dying." And I looked around the circle. There wasn't a person in that group under 80. They were all grandparents, many great-grandparents. All of them had lost parents. Most of them had lost siblings. Certainly, they had lost friends. But this reality that I, too, will pass, my time will come, was ne'alam, was hidden from them. Why? Because again, as the Chofetz Chaim explains, that's part of being a human. To allow for free will, Hashem put blinders on our eyes. We're incapable of seeing that reality. Oh, we can discuss it, we could talk about it, we could think about it, but as a reality that really, really penetrates my conscious thinking, it just sort of never gets there. Oh, I can quote you statistics, I can tell you the odds of dying, I could tell you based on my general health, based on my age, at what time it's most likely I'll pass, but that's in the theoretical world. In the practical, real world, in the operating world of my mind, there's a certain understanding it's just not going to happen. And it requires a tremendous amount of work and a tremendous amount of focus. Thinking about death, but not death in general terms, not death of other people, my demise, the end of my days. And before we really focus on this, I want to focus on one critical understanding. When I mention this concept, oftentimes people have this attitude, oh, excuse me, Rabbi, I don't want to talk about this. It's depressing. Death is such a downer. I'd like to share with you that death is very depressing if you don't understand life. If you don't understand life, then death is the most depressing, ugly thought you could ever imagine. If life is a party, then death is the end of the party. And death is ugly, and you should avoid it like the plague. But when you understand life, when you understand that we're here to grow, when you understand that every moment of life is precious because it allows me to change who I will be for eternity, then life is precious, and then death is the most galvanizing, energizing thought in the world. Life has its end. There's a certain time when I'll be held accountable. There's a certain point where I'll have to answer to Hashem for what I've done, and that thought alone is the most galvanizing, energizing thought imaginable. Let's go, let's move. I have only a certain amount of time, and that is the most invigorating concept that a human being could ever think about. But you have to understand life to understand death. And I once heard Rabbi Miller Zatzal give a very interesting point. He explains that many people are depressed, many people are down, life stinks, life is lousy. If you'd like to cure that, go to a cemetery. Go to a cemetery and start reading the tombstones. Start reading about this one who was born in this and this year and passed away in this and this year. This is a person who, and read it. Read each one, read them, and then say to yourself, and I too will pass. Says Rabbi Miller, that's the greatest cure for depression. Why? Because most depression that we encounter is because people don't understand life. Life stinks because there's no meaning, there's no purpose. But once you fully get it, once you see that there's an end, once you see that grave and you recognize that I will be there, life changes fundamentally and dramatically. All of a sudden there's an end to it. All of a sudden I start asking the key questions. All of a sudden I start leading a life with meaning, with purpose, with direction. And I live a vastly different life. But if you don't stop and think, if you don't really delve into this concept, if you don't dwell on it, what happens is you live a life as most people live, unexamined, just going through the motions, just doing their thing. And the reality is that most people live a very uninspired, very unenjoyable life. If you would like to lead a life of meaning, of purpose, but a life that you fundamentally enjoy, then you have to deal with death. Not because death is depressing, not because we're supposed to be down, but quite the opposite. Because death will give your whole life much more meaning. And the greatest danger of not dealing with death is that you could lead a life and very, very long into it, recognize that you wasted it. That the most precious commodity that you have, the one single gift that God gave you more than any other gift, this thing called life, has been wasted by you, and not because you didn't work hard, and not because you weren't focused, but because you never thought about the key question of life. Now, I've spoken about this topic in many, many different audiences, in many different situations, and every once in a while I get a reaction that sort of, makes me do a double take. I was speaking about this concept in a certain community, and when I was finished my entire piece, people came over to ask questions, to discuss, et cetera, et cetera. And towards the end, I noticed an older couple was standing, kind of hovering on the side. When I was finished with most people, the woman came over and she said, "Rabbi, I loved the lecture." I said, "Thank you very much." Her husband followed suit. "Rabbi, I loved the lecture, but..." Now, I've been around the block long enough to know that when you hear the words, "Rabbi, I loved the lecture, but..." there's something coming. So I waited to see where this was going. "Rabbi, I loved the lecture, but according to what you've just said, I've wasted my entire life." So I asked him what he meant. And he explained to me what he meant. He said, "Well, you've talked about the gym and the spa, that we're here for a purpose, life has meaning, and whatever I shape myself into, I am for eternity. I've never thought about that. My entire life I've made money, I've done quite well, but these concepts that you're speaking about, I never thought about. And according to what you're saying, I've wasted my entire life." Now I want to share with you, when you're on this side of the shtender, and an 80-year-old man is on the other side saying that according to what you've said, he's wasted his entire life, and you know that he might be correct, it's a very uncomfortable position to be in. So what do you say? What do you answer to a man who at the end of his life says, "According to what you've said, I've wasted my entire life"? So you say those lines that we don't really mean. You still have time. Who's to know what your purpose is? You could still grow. But whether I'm the judge, you're the judge, isn't the point. Here is the point. What if this man asked those questions not at 80 years of age, but asked it at 60? What if at 40 years of age he woke up and said, "Wait a minute, I get it. Hashem created the world. There was nothing. Absolute void, absence of physicality. Hashem said there should be, and the sun, the moon, the stars, everything came into existence. I get it. But wait a minute, I also wasn't. And Hashem made me. Gee golly, I wonder why. Why did Hashem make me? What's life about? Why did Hashem put me here? Is there a reason? I never thought about that." Now here's the strangest part. Here's an intelligent, thinking man, a mature individual, who at 80 years of age first deals with that question. But the shocking part was that he was an Orthodox Jew, davening in an Orthodox shul, went to yeshivas. And if you wake up at 80 and begin asking the key fundamental questions of life, it's a bit late in the game. But that is endemic of the human. When Hashem created us, He gave us free will. To allow for free will, Hashem, if it could be, had to put blinders in our eyes so that we're not forced to deal with the most key critical question, why? But you see, if I saw that there was a case, if I saw clearly that there was an end, then I would have to ask the why. If I know there's a beginning and I know there's an end, there's got to also be a reason. Why did Hashem create me? What's life about? What am I doing here? And whilst those are the most critical, meaningful questions a person could ever ask himself, if it were vividly clear in front of me, I would effectively skew the balance, effectively lose free will, and therefore Hashem allows us to walk around in this haze, this sort of quasi state of consciousness, getting it and not getting it, understanding and not understanding it, and fully, sincerely believing in my heart of hearts, I will live forever. I'll always be young, healthy, and alive. And even if I'm getting older, it's okay, because it's only the unfortunate people, only the sick people, only the Nebuch people who die. I'm not a member of that society. And as strange as it sounds, it's what we all do. And the reality is that it's not just about seeing death that we're blind to. It's thinking about all of the critical questions of life. You see, if the human were ever completely rational, then in fact, it would be a different life we lead. But because Hashem allowed for free will, Hashem put these blinders in, we can't view death, we can't view reality, and we can't think about the most fundamental concepts of our existence. And again, it's not just about death, and it's not just about religion. Tom Watson was the founder of IBM. His goal was to create a company that would be truly a titan in its era, a great company. And he surrounded himself with very successful people, captains of industry, people who were leaders in their own circles, and he built a tremendous corporation. When IBM was in its heyday, Tom Watson sat on his desk, and he had designed over his desk an archway. And on the archway were the letters T-H-I-N-K, think. Because what Tom Watson found was that the most brilliant minds in business in his day, all of these successful people, were sound asleep at the switch. And what he was trying to create was a culture of thinking, of asking, of not just accepting, not just being robotic, not just going through the motion, but asking the key critical questions. And the reality is that we human beings don't think. There's a story told about a CEO. He was retiring, and in honor of that occasion, the corporation made a gala dinner. And the CEO gets up to speak, and he looks around the room. And he says, I can see that many of you wish that you had my job. Many of you dream about having my job. Well, I want to tell you a little bit about my job. My daughter was recently married. At the wedding, I looked around. I didn't recognize any of her friends. I didn't recognize any of the books that my daughter read. I didn't recognize the music she listened to. I didn't recognize much about her life. And at that moment, I realized that it was my daughter that I didn't recognize. If you want my job, you have to be willing to pay the price. But I don't think it's worth the price. And with that, he sat down. But I want you to hear the words that this man was saying. He was a goal setter, an ambitious, driven human being. He accomplished worlds. But what he found out late in the game was that the stars that he was shooting for were the wrong goals. He reached tremendous heights, but there were accomplishments that didn't really matter to him. And he was heading down the tracks of life, speeding in that locomotive, but heading the wrong way. And when he retired, he recognized the fact that 20, 30 years of his life were dedicated to a dream that at the end of his life, he no longer shared. And this reality that if you don't ask the key critical questions, if you don't deal with the whys, if you don't ask yourself, why does Hashem create me? What am I about? What am I going to feel like when I'm done my job? The reality is if you don't ask those questions, you're going to come up with some very, very strange things that you spend your time on. Things that you're so involved in. Things that you're so engaged in. And when they're done, you say to yourself, why'd I do it? And I believe that you'll find this over and over. Most people that I meet end up being what I call a yellow belt in five styles. I'll explain to you what that means. There's a fellow in yeshiva with me who was very, very interested in martial arts. When he was in grade school, I think it was about fifth grade, he began studying karate. He learned the stances, the kicks, the punches, and he was very diligent and learned well. Happened to be, though, that after a year or two, his family moved, and he had to go to a new city. Now, he had reached a certain level of proficiency. He took his yellow belt test. He passed. But now that he found himself in this new city, he couldn't find the same style of karate. So he had to begin again from the start, from a white belt. So he relearned a different style, different stances, different kicks, different punches. He was diligent, focused. He again took his first rank test, and he became a yellow belt in the second style. Okay, good and well. Then it was time for him to go to high school, and he went to an out-of-town high school. He found himself in a third city. And again, he was very interested in martial arts, wanted to begin studying, but he could only find a different style than the other two. So he had to begin again from the beginning. Different stances, different kicks, different punches. After a year or two, he succeeded in reaching the yellow belt, and then he had to switch yeshivas in mid-high school. New city, new karate style, new stances, new kicks, new punches, and then he got to his yellow belt. Then it was time for Beis Medrash, and he found himself in a new city. After 6-7 years of diligent, focused training, this fellow had accomplished the rank of yellow belt in 5 separate styles. But yellow belt is a beginner. Had he spent those same 6 or 7 focused years of diligent training in one style, he would have been a black belt. But because it was diffused, first this style, then that style, that style, then that style, he reached the grand rank of beginner in 5 separate styles. And I believe that's an apt parable for most people that you meet. Most people that you meet become very successful in many different endeavors in life. All very important at the time, all very significant during that stage of life, and then they get to the next stage and it no longer matters. In the United States of America, when a boy is growing up, sports are king. What you do on the basketball court defines you. So imagine we have a fellow who devotes himself. His jump shot is great. His layups are perfect. This guy is really right there. But then he gets a little bit older, and sports no longer is quite as important. Now it's schoolwork, getting good grades, and he focuses on that. And he does very well. Then it's what college he gets into. And then it's which career. As soon as he graduates, he focuses very much on his career and getting the best job and making himself career ready. And he lands himself a very solid, good job. And now he's on the career track and he's making money and he's focused on his advancement and he's spending all of his effort and all of his energies on that. Well, after a while, he starts making money and then some more money and some more money. But then it's other things that he starts focusing on. Now it's his retirement, maybe which nursing home he's going into. And he spends his life shifting focus to focus to focus. Believe me, when he's 35 years of age, he doesn't care whether he had a good jump shot or didn't. But when he's 70 years of age, it really isn't relevant to him whether he had the corner office or not. But you see, at each stage of life, that was so significant. It welled up with such importance that he devoted all of his energies, all of his talents, all of his strength to that goal, and he reached it. He attained it. He reached the rank of yellow belt, but then the style changed, his focus has changed, his priorities changed, and he found himself in a different style. And I think this is a very apt parable. Most people you meet go through life without a plan, without a purpose, whatever, I'll wing it. You know, come on, right now I got to do this, right now I got to do that. Whatever I'm into at the time, and I'm going to do well at it. I'm not some kind of schlock. I'm a focused, serious guy. If it's schoolwork, if it's making money, maybe even if it's learning, if that's what I'm into at the time, I'll focus on it. But shifting priorities, generation, time period after time period, until at the end of their life, they find that they focused on many, many different things except the key issue. Why did Hashem create me? What's life about? The actual growth of life, the reason that I'm here, the purpose behind it all, and therefore spending tremendous effort and drive focused on those areas seems to have been forgotten, and they become very proficient in many, many things, but the reason for it all is forgotten. And it's a strange phenomena. We human beings are so focused, we're so intelligent, we're so wise, except when it comes to the key issue of life. Could you imagine the following? Imagine you have an 18-year-old son, and he says to you, know, Dad, listen, I want to take a road trip this summer. I want to drive to California. Now, you're a little reluctant to loan your car to an 18-year-old to drive across country, but you say to him, well, tell me, do you have a map? No. Do you have a plan of where you're going to sleep? No. Do you have enough money for gas? No, Dad, I can't even think of that. I'm going to take the car and I'll go. I'll end up in California, 3,000 miles. I just end up there. Obviously, you wouldn't give the keys to that young man because he's not thinking. He's not dealing with reality. And as strange as it sounds, that's how most people deal with life. I'll just wing it. I'll go through it. Listen, I'm young. Eventually, I'll get married. Eventually, I'll get a job. And I'll get another job. And I'll have a family. And whatever. We'll go through this thing. And I guess at the end of my life, at some point, I'll figure it out at some point. When I'm 60, when I'm 80, surely I'll get it then. And when they're 80 years old, they show up at a lecture. And the rabbi starts talking about the gym and the spa. He starts talking about the fact that Hashem created us for a purpose. And they walk over to the rabbi and they say the words, according to what you've just said, I've wasted my entire life. The most painful words a human being will ever speak are the words, would've, could've, and should've. But they're not spoken by lazy people. They're not spoken by people who are out on all kinds of pleasure cruises. People who are diligent, people who are focused, people who are spending their entire life working, but working towards what? Working towards what goal? Working towards what aspiration? But you see, if you don't ask the why behind it, if you don't deal with the why, then who knows? You wake up at 40, you wake up at 50, you wake up at 80, and you don't know. And to wake up at that stage in the game and start asking the why behind it is a little late in the game. The Chafetz Chaim explains to us, this is basic to the human, not by accident, but this allows for free will. But the solution to it is to deal with it. The solution is to think about it. The solution is to deal with this issue called death in a very real way. And it's not depressing at all. It's not a downer. Because when you embrace it, when you recognize the fact that it will be me in that box, then life itself takes on a whole different meaning. Life is much more precious. Life is much more meaningful. And you begin asking the key critical questions. Why does Hashem create me? What does Hashem want from me? What's life really about? And you lead a life of meaning, purpose, of inspiration, and real significance. And at the risk of maybe getting people a little bit down, I ask your indulgence, but I'd like to share with you a Musar exercise. Maybe one of the most critical, pivotal Musar exercises you'll ever engage in. Join me, please. Imagine the following. Imagine you're sitting in a beautiful room. You notice it's very somber. There's lovely wallpaper on the wall, carpet, quite a number of pews, and many, many people sitting there, maybe 200, maybe 300 people in the room. And you look around the room and you recognize everyone there. Your friends, your relatives. Oh my goodness, there's your cousin Sarah. You haven't seen her in years. Sarah, you don't look so good. Why are you so sad? She's crying. You look around the room and you see a lot of tissues, a lot of people sobbing. And then you look to the front of the room and you realize that there are candles. Oh my, candles. And there's a box. Oh, it's a funeral. Oh, and then you realize that it's you in the box. Oh my goodness, it's my funeral. But my funeral, I'm dead? What do you mean I'm dead? I can't be dead. It's never going to happen. It's never really, what do you mean I'm dead? But I'm thinking, but I'm feeling. But what do you mean? I can't be. Come on, guys, this is a joke, right? And then somebody gets up to speak and he says all those nice things. The rabbi gets up to speak and says lots of things about you. Oh, rabbi, that's so kind of you. You didn't have to. Very sweet, rabbi. I appreciate it. And then you notice that people are really, really upset. And people are really, really crying. Okay, guys, this has been really fun, but let's come on, guys. And then the funeral's over and people come over to your casket, and they start saying things. People start apologizing. People start divulging secrets. Your business partner comes over and speaks into the box, your box, and you hear the words, listen, you know all those times we were short on cash? I'm sorry to tell you, I was taking the money. I apologize. I hope you mochel me. You want to choke the guy. You want to punch him, but you can't move because you're locked into your body, but you're fully alert and you're fully conscious and you're beginning to get it. You're beginning to understand, wait a minute, this can't be. This is a joke. Come on, guys, this was a fun experience. Very nice of you all to come. Very nice of you to say those things. But this can't really be happening. But then they pick up that box and they carry it out. And you see your loved ones, you see your best friends, your most loved relatives are carrying that box and they're carrying it out and they put it into the back of a hearse. And now the moment begins to turn a bit more somber because, guys, it was really cute. It was nice of you all to come, but let's cut it out. Come on, I can't, this really can't be happening. But they close the back of the hearse and they begin driving it down the highway. And this is the most surreal moment of your existence because I'm alert, I'm conscious. I see the highway, I see the sun. This can't be, what does this mean? But they drive the hearse out to the cemetery. And you feel every bump. But how can I feel I'm dead? But I'm not dead, I'm alive. And I'm thinking, but I'm not. What's going on? And they drive and drive. And finally the hearse stops and you feel the jolt as it stops. And they open the back door and you hear it open. And you feel as they pull your casket out and they begin carrying it. They walk a little bit and they stop. They walk a little bit and they stop. And all eyes are filled with tears. And you want to scream, a primordial, powerful scream, stop, what are you doing? But they don't stop. They take your box and they lay it down on those straps. And they gather around and you see the dirt and you see the people and you see the faces and you can't believe that this is happening. And then they pull the straps away and they slowly, slowly let your box down. Your casket begins getting lowered into the ground. Hey guys, cut it out. I'm in here. Guys, cut it out. Come on, let's go. What's going on? What's going on? It's getting deeper and deeper. The walls are getting higher and higher. And all of a sudden you hear the loud thud as your casket hits the ground. And you want to scream out, stop, what are you doing? Stop it, I'm not going to be able to breathe in here. Cut it out. And then you hear the crash, the powerful crash of dirt as it comes cascading on top of your casket, and it's loud as thunder, and it's one shovelful, and another shovelful, and another, and another. And it's at that moment of your existence that you begin to get it. Life had a reason, life had a purpose, and life has an end. And this is the last moment of my existence. Stop, you want to scream, stop, stop, but they don't stop. More dirt and more dirt, cascade after cascade. Stop, stop, stop. They don't stop until finally your casket is covered. A layer of dirt covers your casket, and that terrifying moment, that moment that you ran away from, that moment that you tried to escape your entire existence comes true. You leave. You separate, your body is left in the casket, and you leave with all of your senses, fully alert, acutely aware, and you leave this earth. My friends, that is the most powerful, inspirational moment in a person's existence, if you can envision it now. Why? Because you see, as long as I'm alive, I can change. As long as I'm alive, I can grow. As long as there's breath in my lungs and blood in my veins, I could change my course, I can grow, I could accomplish. The greatest gift is something called life. When the curtain comes down, it's over. What you are at that moment is what you are for eternity. You don't change then. Now you can change. Now you can accomplish. Now you can grow. Once it's over, it's too late. The single most powerful moment in a person's life is if they can envision that moment. They can envision that last scene. It changes the whole existence because life itself then has tremendous meaning. Life itself has tremendous purpose. If we could just wake up and understand life, then we could live a vastly different life. As long as there's time, there's hope. As long as there's time, I can grow and I can change.